You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble. Hi, and welcome to the third episode of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And I hope you've already all learned the lesson of why we try to differentiate each other in this manner. We've got a lot of talk about this week. I think somebody should perhaps mention one of the top bits of news that perhaps is making some people giggle and some people a little sad.
Oh, what? I can't say I'm surprised. If I'm brutally honest,
I'm surprised it's lasted this long.
Yeah, I like the principle behind it. I like the model, but with broadband speeds the way they are in the UK, there's just nobody's really got the broadband speeds to cope with it.
And the speed of light, and the concept of if people don't like the idea of buying something on Steam, or Xbox Live, or PSN, it feels so much better to actually just buy the lease of streaming something.
Well, again, that's something that went against me. Like I said last week, I like to have something tangible in my hands. I don't want an imaginary cloud in the nether regions in a galaxy far, far away with all my stuff on it.
Yeah. Bugger that. And I don't want to do a video call. I don't want to do a wobbly Skype call to my game collection. Which is all I ever had with OnLive. I've got the box from the EG Expo. I've given that a go several times. And I think the most successful I ever got with OnLive was playing the demo, because you can choose any game on the service and play about half an hour. I chose Arkham City.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent game. Already completed it on 360, but I thought, I'll give it a go, so I've got something to compare it against. And you know right at the start where Bruce Wayne is in the prison?
Yeah.
And you have to rock yourself on the chair?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Lagged.
Lagged?
Yeah, it was...
So you're not even fighting, and it's lagging?
Yeah, it's quite a small lag, but it was enough with the chair rocking sequence that if you timed it with what you could see, you weren't getting up enough momentum to actually get the chair over. You had to sort of do it slightly before.
That'd be one of them times where I think I'd end up throwing away my controller in frustration. God damn you, rock the chair!
Yeah, and well, all those people who were complaining about the sluggish controls and Killzone too. When it came out.
Yeah.
It was a little bit like that.
Oh, God.
And that was my best experience with it.
That was your best?
That was my best experience with it. My other experiences with it were, this is awesome. I'm trying to play Borderlands, and it looks like a dodgy YouTube video with artifacting across the screen.
Funny.
So, pretty much everything I've ever tried on live, I've given up in frustration. So the very fact that they had low numbers using the service, and they've had to go through this we're bankrupt, oh we're back, but we're not, we're wearing a moustache this time, we're on live with a moustache.
On live with a moustache.
It just so they can presumably write off debts having the servers running for.
I can't tell if it's a completely new investor or if it's somebody previously invested in the company that's now bailed it out again. Is it Lauder Partners lot or something?
I don't know who it is.
Because it's sort of the technology behind it ties in a little bit with my day job and some of the stuff I do for that in terms of writing. And I've always wondered, well, quite what is the infrastructure that they really are using behind this? Service, is it actually what they need? And then of course obviously the obvious thing that broadband in this country sucks.
Yeah,
it's like, well, we've got, you know, cable in some areas, and they'd be fine with it. But then again, you've got ISPs that have no idea how to handle the fact that usage in the evenings means that it goes up. Yeah. The usage
Goodness.
Does. Goodness, there's more demand when people are home from work, and never account really? For that. It's funny how, I suppose, maybe it'll take them time. It's like the fact that the National Grid knows that once there's, like, I don't know, like a break during a football match, or Coronation Street's just finished, they know that they're going to have a sudden surge of people boiling kettles. And so they allow for this. However, broadband providers have yet to realise, you know, that kind of thinking that, oh, people are home, you know, after six, maybe we need to provision more.
But then it's all set up on the sharing so much bandwidth between so many users in each area, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you've got the whole situation where if everyone's going to go and try and watch something on iPlayer at the same time, everything in that area of the city is going to grind to a halt.
Yeah.
Which I've seen happen, yeah.
Which really means that actually, if you consider, I mean, it's not even obviously watching the same thing, it's just everyone using high bandwidth services at the same time. So if somebody's streaming in one place, somebody's trying to use on live in another, and I mean, the person who came doing that Facebook update might not be using stuff, but they're still using bandwidth, and it's all going to add up. And
it's a bit like on New Year's Eve when you send a text, obviously the networks just crash because of the amount of people physically texting at that time, isn't it?
Well, you tried to phone people and you cut, it doesn't work.
Yeah, it just stopped.
And it's probably, you know, the numbers will be different, but I do remember reading years ago that the ISPs worked on the proviso of, what was it, about 50-to-1 connection, where you can have so many customers. I mean, I probably got that number wildly wrong. But this might have been also back in the days of dial-up, where they just presumed that they were... If they had 200 customers, you know, signed up to their service, there may only be a half a dozen or so using it at that any one time. So, you know, they can say, oh, we've got the infrastructure to cope with this. And of course, well, they do, so long as not everyone is actually using it all at once. And that's when the whole thing just grinds to a halt. But... that's a problem with, you know, things like broadband, and it's even worse in places, in parts of the US, where you have little islands of quite decent broadband
big
cities.
Do you know what? One thing that always struck me as a little odd, and I didn't realise it at the time, because amazingly, the internet provision in Cornwall was better than... but the fictional or real town, I don't know if it's real or fictional, the town that is used in Twilight, in the novels, they actually make a point of the fact that the internet connection Bella's got, like, her dad's house is dial-up. They make a point of this, and it's somewhere in the middle, you know, in the town that it's based in, somewhere in the middle of Washington State, on the West Coast. It's the sticks. And so, yeah, I, in a way, I can kind of reimagine what it's like being on 56k dial-up for reading Twilight, which is not a reason why you should have to read Twilight. I don't know if you should ever need to read Twilight, really, when you think about it.
Well, either way, it's a horrific experience.
Let's move on to happier things. Gamescom.
Although, hang on, I've just remembered here, right? I was reading that one of the reasons that OnLive have had the financial trouble is that they made predictions of how many servers they were going to need, how much computing power to throw at it.
Right.
So they had to get that from the outset. And because the numbers are apparently so low, they've been paying for vast amounts of computing power and server rack space that has pretty much been running Windows screen servers.
So wait, so they actually had on-premise servers.
Apparently so.
They did. They weren't actually using proper cloud technology. Which, well, I say proper, it's when you could obviously take your data center needs and burst it out onto public servers and something like, I don't know, like one of the Amazon ones or something, so that you could basically increase with actual demand.
That's it in a nutshell. They said they it's because it had to be running their solutions to cope with the, you know, minimizing the lag, which, as I said, in my experience, and you know, again, this is in the UK, so it's not really a large geographic area. My experience is we're not good with lag.
Or they could have just made sure that they coded everything on open standards, and then it would have been compatible with pretty much any public cloud that's available for bursting.
Oh, wow. That's just crazy talk.
Wow. Yeah.
If anyone's curious about the technology and the way it's supposed to work with minimizing lag, Digital Foundry on Eurogamer did do a rather good article on what they were doing with it. So, yeah. I'll shut up now.
So, Gamescom. What's to see? Was there actually anything anyone liked the look of?
I thought Sony had a stronger Gamescom than E3, to be fair. They made me smile from ear to ear this time.
Is that because you're in a PS Vita, though?
I actually really like the look of that new games, The Puppeteer and Rain as well.
Okay.
Rain looks quite interesting. I saw the trailer for it the other night, and that looks very original. I like how you can only be seen in the rain. It's quite cool.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting little concept. And, of course, it works as a visual effect as well. So,
definitely. I think I was more excited for that. Obviously, the cross-play titles that they've announced with the cross-buying scheme of the PS Vita, which is really good. I think that's something that they should have done from the beginning, perhaps. If you buy, I think it's the new Ratchet and Clank on the Vita, you're going to get the PS3 version for free, or vice versa. And Vita owners are now going to finally get included in the PlayStation Plus as well. So yeah, it was good all round, to be fair. And obviously,
yeah, there was a lot positive with the Vita.
Yes.
And it needed it, frankly.
Oh yeah, hell yeah, it did. And there is a new game showcased by Media Molecule. Is it called Tear Apart or Tear Away, something like that?
Tearaway, I think.
Which looked amazing. I loved how you could literally put your finger onto the trackpad and it appeared on the screen, and you could actually, you know, tear stuff up in this magical world of paper. And it looked really interesting, to be fair. They've got some good ideas there, and hopefully, now they've got that there, perhaps some of the other publishers will be going, that might actually work, and come across. Call of Duty for the Vita just looked like Call of Duty.
Call of Duty's always Call of Duty will always look like Call of Duty, except when it's not Call of Duty, in which case it's almost everything else. I got really excited for Dead Space 3 because the trailer at E3 really threw me off with the fact that there was the whole snow thing and really big monsters. And then the trailer that they released for Gamescom was far more kind of sort of claustrophobic and far more sinister and more like the reason I like the Dead Space franchise.
Exactly, more Dead Space.
Yeah. I think to a certain extent there's been more focus on cooperative play with a lot of the games, like Dead Space 3, Resident Evil 6, and what was the other one?
I don't remember another co-op.
Well, to a certain extent, Devil May Cry 5, you know, with Virgil thing. I'm not entirely sure whether it will be co-op or.
No, I think it's meant to be just a single player, like all the rest of.
It's a shame.
Yeah, it is. Co-op is quite. It's getting there, but I think some games you still need to have that.
Yeah.
One-on-one time. To be fair, it's.
Mm.
Co-op is something which has been around for ages, but only really seemed to have grabbed people's attention with Halo, the original Halo.
Yes.
Mm. And even with things like the original Resistance, that had the campaign playable in co-op, and that added a lot to it. So I'm very pleased to see, you know, more co-op.
Mm. Yeah. To be fair, Perfect Dark on the N64 also had co-op, but admittedly it didn't change the story at all, and it was completely optional, but did have it.
That's actually quite fun to play that. I think that, I mean, there were basically a couple of games that were sort of standing out for me. Another was was it Remember Me?
Oh yeah, I quite like the look of that.
From was it Capcom publishing that?
Is that the one with Nelia? Is it Nelia?
Lydia. It's the whole cyberpunk thing. It's less orange than Deus Ex Human Revolution was last year.
Hey, I quite like that.
I loved the game. It was the orange I couldn't handle. It was very orange.
It was like being tangoed for 10 hours.
But that, it looked really good, and it got me thinking, because obviously it's got that kind of, it's obviously drawn on the cyberpunk heritage.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of like, why is it people haven't really gone out right? I mean, there's tons of cyberpunk novels out there that would all make, I think, really good game adaptations, because you could, rather than a film, you'd obviously have the time scope to cover everything that's in the novel, and a lot of them have like maybe multiple perspectives and stuff, so you'd be able to do that better in a game. And because I've started reading, is it Sinner? For the first time, which came out in like I think 91. I can't remember the author's name. The lady wrote it, and it won like an Arthur C. Clarke Award. And I'm just kind of reading it. I'm like, you know what? This would make a really good game. And so people, I know adaptations can be a bit naff, but I'm just Remember Me was just making me think there's so many cyberpunk novels that could be made.
I actually liked when they showed off that memory remix power as well. That looked quite interesting with the different various site modes that they're promising.
Sounded very interesting.
Yes, which is good.
Very good. The Capcom again, Devil May Cry trailer that they released. One thing that it's I've now decided that Devil May Cry game is going to be, it's the video game of They Live. Other than Paul, who else gets the reference? I need to check this now.
I don't, unfortunately, and I haven't actually seen the trailer because I'm not sure whether I'm really into it as much as perhaps I should be.
Have you played the previous Devil May Crys?
I have, yes. I played Devil May Cry 4 and I found it to be quite cool, but it involved a lot of button bashing and I didn't really get into that.
I never really liked 4. My favourites are 1 and 3. 2's, but I 4 actually dislike more than 2, which some people would probably lynch me for. But They Live is an 1980s John Carpenter film. Which actually had a fight sequence from it perfectly recreated in an episode of South Park. Do you remember the cripple fight?
Oh god,
my memory, the bells are ringing in my head as if I should remember.
Timmy
it.
And Jimmy fighting to the death.
Yes,
that was that was lifted from They Live.
Cool.
Basically
it's one of the longest fights, isn't it?
Yeah, it just goes on and on. But anyway, the trailer...
Not just that, but Duke Nukem's catchphrase, here to chew bubblegum, well, kick ass and chew bubblegum, and I'm all out of gum, actually originated from They Live.
Yep.
Oh, right. Yeah. I might have to check that out then.
It's an excellent little film.
Mm. No, I will do, definitely.
But, yeah, going back to the Devil May Cry, I was sort of liking the look of it, though I'm not sure what to think of Virgil at the moment, because Virgil's back.
I'm kind of wondering, because they've obviously gone with a different art style, but they've gone with, it seems like, quite similar mechanics in terms of kind of slashing and, you know, kind of up in the air, doing all these acrobatic moves, you know, and all that. And it's, I'm kind of wondering where it actually fits in to the, you know, saga so far.
I mean, that's the thing that it kind of doesn't. I saw earlier footage, which was Dante going into Devil Trigger mode, and he looked like the previous Dante from the previous 4 games when he was in Devil Trigger mode, which was quite confusing. I'm not sure if they've stuck with that or not.
The main reason for me being interested in it is the developers behind it. Is it Team Ninja? Who did Enslaved?
No, it's Ninja Theory.
I knew it had Ninja somewhere. But I love their Enslaved game. And
Enslaved was excellent.
It was excellent. So if they can bring their storytelling to Devil May Cry and bring their unique take on it, then I will be checking it out.
But I have to admit, it'd be nice to have a Devil May Cry that the storyline actually kind of made a bit more sense.
I thought that was part of the point of the series, that it didn't really.
Actually, two storyline kind of made sense, and that's the one everyone hates.
So I will go on record with Devil May Cry as saying I haven't played any of them, and I played about 5 minutes of Devil May Cry 4 because I got it for 99 pence.
Wow.
Okay. Bargain.
Yeah, and it was like, oh, this is a game. Right, what else have I got?
That was basically the issue I had. I got Devil May Cry 4 with my first Xbox, and I did play about 10, 15 minutes of it, and then it just got repetitive, and it just was like, okay, what else have we got there? Okay, trade that in.
I think the reason 4 was kind of, was because the story was, it was worse than 3. 3 to me so far has been the best out of the lot, because there was some good characterization going on. The dialogue was really snappy, and things did make a sort of reasonable amount of sense.
I think to a certain extent, in terms of that type of game, Bayonetta was probably better for story than Devil May Cry 4.
I actually really enjoyed Bayonetta.
Yeah.
I have to say, for me, that was probably one of the best titles in recent years.
That was absolutely hat stand.
Mm. Yeah.
From what I played of it, I think about the first chapter or so.
Mm.
It was just, ooh, right, okay, ooh, right, okay.
I got paid to write an in-depth game guide for it for a website, so I got very intimate with Bayonetta.
Okay.
I saw Gamescom trailer for Dishonored. With a bit of gameplay in it as well. Anybody else seen some of the Dishonored stuff that came out?
I have been following it, but I didn't see what actually came out over from Gamescom, and it does look very good.
This particular bit that I saw, it was looking very Bioshock inspired.
Which is always good.
Yes.
Mostly because sorry, Paul.
I think to a. I forgot my point now.
Oh.
Karen, will come to me in a minute.
I would just say that Bioshock 1 and 2 are probably the closest we've got in mainstream gaming to the sort of steampunk look.
Yeah.
It's not quite, but it's close to it. And I wish we could see more like that, because that's why part of why it was so refreshing.
I have to admit, one thing did sort of slightly jar me about the stuff that I saw, because it was kind of like a trailer with a bit of gameplay that I saw for this one. And they had, in sequence, parts of it, lines of what should we do with the drunken whaler, not sailor. And I kept, my head was trying to always keep correcting it, saying sailor, but they were actually saying whaler, and they did actually have one screen where there was like a whale carcass being sort of like offloaded from a ship or something. So it's looking all kinds of weird and interesting.
It does look quite nice from what I've seen of it.
I think the most unique feature in terms of kind of gameplay and whatnot from the game so far is actually kind of the level of kills that you can do, because obviously you can do a lot of stuff within other games, but this is like first person and you get to kind of slice the neck of like your enemies and stuff like that. It's not something that I've seen from a first person before.
And there's like
blood spurting out.
And there's the whole magic element as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Was anybody else excited by anything at Gamescom? But that sounds like a spaceship touching down then. Some of you should know.
No, for me, the main highlight was Sony actually getting behind the Vita to be fair. It was about time and it was well overdue. And being very, very selfish, I want stuff for my Vita.
That's fair enough.
You know.
I kind of want some more decent stuff for 3DS, but...
Mind. Yeah. So, but no, from what I've seen, it was a very good, you know, time to be out there, and there was some good stuff coming out, but a lot of it was just the same again. I don't know why. Maybe I'm just getting old. I'm just going to become the grumpy old man of the podcast, I think. Well, back in my day.
Aye.
Oh, no. All right, well, I think I'm going to move us on. Perhaps this is only big news for me, I don't know. But the Back to Frank Black initiative is bringing a Back to Frank Black book out. For those who don't know, this is a reference to the character Frank Black, who was played by Lance Henriksen in the TV series Millennium, which was created by Chris Carter, you know, that dude behind X-Files. Yes. And it actually is based in the same universe as the X-Files and actually crosses over in an episode of X-Files Season 7.
Hmm.
So I
do believe I recall that.
There were three seasons of Millennium, and actually it's perhaps far stronger than a lot of seasons of X-Files. I mean, I love them both, but there's a book coming up that's going to have essays and stuff from a bunch of the creators, plus some of the actors and stuff, and forewords and whatnot from Chris Carter, and I think Lance Henriksen, who plays Frank Black's got some stuff in there as well, and I'm just looking forward to it, because I haven't tried writing to Fox to say you should bring back Millennium, but I do think.
But you've thought about it.
I've thought about it, and the whole Back to Frank Black movement is about trying to bring Millennium back, either on the small screen or the big screen. And there's actually a sort of some people do suggest that maybe, you know, if they do make a third X-Files movie, maybe there should be a crossover moment, because the character of Frank Black didn't exactly die or anything. He's still going in the X-Files universe.
Yeah, so why not?
Yeah, it could totally work. Totally.
I actually found his character to be a lot more interesting than Mulder and Scully. Mm. I'll probably be shocked for saying that, but it was a lot darker and grittier from what I can recall of it. And I did enjoy the series very much, to be fair. With X-Files, I sort of gave up about season 6 or 5. It just got a little bit weak for me.
I'll diplomatically say that I enjoyed X-Files for a reasonable amount of time until it disappeared up its own arse. Where it became an almost endless spiral of what kind of mad conspiracy theories can we latch onto this one, and say, oh, we've got the, you know, the oil people, and then Smoking Man, and we've got these different agents, and what can we do with them?
I used to watch it when I was on BBC, but I only started watching it in the later seasons because I was too young to watch it when it first started airing.
Oh,
here we go again.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so I didn't actually start watching it until about, season 5 or 6 anyway. Maybe even a bit later. Even a bit later, actually, because it wasn't until maybe around 99 or 2000, so the last few seasons, actually. I had read, funnily enough, they had in high school library apparently fiction that was suitable for younger kids, which was tie-in novels for the X-Files in, one of the sections in my secondary school's library. So... I think one of the things is with X-Files and Millennium is that certainly with the second X-Files film, which was basically two regular non-alien X-Files episodes back to back. If they did a third X-Files film, at least bringing in the character of Frank Black and maybe a couple of the others from the Millennium series, I think it could work, because Frank's gift, if you can call it a gift, as he finds in the series, it's not really a gift. Is I mean, he can, was it? He can sort of see into the minds of killers and stuff. I think it could be, the character could be used in an X-Files film quite effectively with Mulder and Scully. However, I'm not going to fully discuss my plot outline for a third X-Files movie, which I have buried in the recesses of my brain that one day.
It's yours, precious.
I want to unleash it upon the world.
Awesome.
Now on this, two things. First of all, more Lance Henriksen is always a good thing.
Yes.
He is pretty damn excellent in almost anything he's been in.
Almost, yeah.
Depending on, you know, the low rent films is sometimes popped up.
Yeah, I think there was a film called, was it Pumpkinhead That's Bad?
Pumpkinhead was good. It was the one that had what's his face? A relative of Wes Craven wrote the script. I can't remember.
Oh,
the name.
You know that's going to be good then.
No. Well, goes into the military base, I think it was.
Yeah, buried in a desert somewhere. All levels of bad. But yeah, for those who don't know, because I think actually there's a few people that realise who Lance Henriksen is. He's the guy that played Bishop in Aliens. He's the voice of Admiral Hackett in Mass Effect.
Yes.
Every line delivered was solid gold. Awesome.
And what many people, because I've actually got his biography that came out the other year.
For a second there, I thought you were going to say, I've actually got him in the cupboard.
That would be brilliant.
Him earlier.
What a lot of people don't realise is that he couldn't read when he started acting. He'd actually had a really disruptive childhood. Actually, didn't really have a settled childhood at all, and never really went to school. When he finally got out of the military and various other things, and he started acting, he couldn't read. So he used to get people to read his lines to him, and he'd tape it, and then he'd basically listen to the recording to learn his lines. He eventually did learn to read, but it wasn't until he was partway through his 20s or his early 30s that he finally learned how to read. So, yeah.
That is impressive.
So I'm basically hinting that maybe people should at least check out this Back to Frank book, which is out next month, because I think it could be a rather interesting read.
Cool. It wasn't on my radar up until now, really, but... No.
But in case anyone's wondering, it's a Fourth Horseman Press that are going to be publishing that. Shall we?
Oh, hang on. I just thought there. I'll just also point out that he is in the original Terminator.
Yes. He was actually considered for the role of Terminator as well. Until somebody said, we want somebody with muscles, basically. Hence...
Arnie. Arnold Schwarzenegger, yeah.
Even despite the fact that it's always annoyed me about the Terminator films, at least with Arnie's one, because it's like he's a bit too obvious. You see, if I was going to send back a killer robot from the future to the past to kill someone, I would make them look unobvious. You know.
Or like Robert Patrick.
Yeah.
Yes, I was going to say, Lance Henriksen would have made a good Terminator in the style of Robert Patrick.
Yes.
He would have made a very good unassuming sort of but simmering menace.
Yeah, he would have been really good at that, to be fair.
I didn't know he was considered for that, but I actually wanted to see that alternate universe version of Terminator now.
Yes.
We need a reality machine or something.
Let's go view what that alternate reality did when they had Lance Henriksen as the Terminator. Yeah. Okay, moving on to the thing that we kind of want to discuss, kind of want to bite our hands and thumbs at. The demise of the Dandy.
Yeah.
Good God. Really? I mean, have you seen the Dandy lately? Bloody hell. I have.
How's it? Just
shambles.
What was that, Retroid? Did you have problems getting hold of the Dandy?
I was looking up and down all the shops I could find in Carlisle, I could not find a single copy. The Beano, yes. Doctor Who comic, various other ones, Dora the Explorer with freebie gifts on the cover, things like that.
I even found a Thundercats comic.
Around a lot. What was that, sorry, Cookie?
I even found a Thundercats comic.
Well, that was... Yeah.
No, I didn't find one of those either, but apparently Carlisle is just the back end of publishing.
You haven't missed out. You seriously have not missed out on that. Crikey.
I have figures for how hard it was for me to find either the Dandy or the Beano down here in Cornwall. I went into 5 different shops to get both. After going into 3, I finally found the Beano.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I went to my 5th store that I found the Dandy. And that was because I went into one of the larger WH Smiths in the county. So.
Now then.
It wasn't in my local newsagent. It wasn't actually in quite a few supermarkets. It wasn't even in a smaller Smiths. It wasn't until I went to a really big Smiths that I found it. And then I was perhaps greatly disappointed once I found it. And I'm pretty sure I'm not the only person who was bitterly disappointed.
Yeah, that doesn't really do it justice. It was a total bloody shambles. I used to read the Dandy every week, along with the Beano and Buster and Wizard and Chips and Topper. That was before I actually found somewhere that sold Marvel comics and DC comics. And they were my comics as I was growing up. And
This
Dandy was just unbelievable.
What was it specifically about it? Was it the sort of level of the stories, or was it the artwork?
The level of the stories is pretty shocking. Desperate Dan actually looks like a crazy, weird manga character that's actually gone wrong in somebody's head, and it's just his jawline, rather than sort of being quite a stubby and circle that I can remember, is now a massive, just like a big rectangle coming down.
Yeah.
He just looks totally... It looks like somebody was high as they drew him or something. I don't know. I have no other way of explaining it. There was a parody of Wolverine in it that they cast, which was three panels long. Not even just 3 squares.
I have,
and that was cast as a comic.
I have to make the stuff that was either a page or more than a page long, I found was really, really bad. And actually, the only stuff that was maybe bearable was the 3-panel strips that they had every so often. The jokes in that they almost worked in the 3-panel ones. The longer ones, it was just like, where's this going? Oh, it's going there. Why is it going there? None of this makes sense. It's not even funny. I managed to get some test readers for the Beano and the Dandy yesterday afternoon, because nobody has anything better to do on a Sunday. And I subjected my mother and my middle brother, who's 19, to it. We didn't think we could get my 8-year-old brother to kind of, you know, give it a go, because his attention span's a little bit, you know, and he's highly critical of things. If he doesn't like it, he won't go near it. I think the most damning indictment was my mum going that she wouldn't buy it for my 8-year-old brother, even if he was vaguely interested in it, because the quality was so bad with the writing. And they're wondering why the sales have been absolutely appalling. It's like, well, have you actually looked at the content? Have you looked at where it's actually been distributed? I think the content and then the distribution issue is probably their 2 main problems.
Yeah. For a simple fact, Banana Man. Do you remember Banana Man?
I remember the cartoons.
In the Dandy, it was pretty much done like... Well, when I was younger, it was done like the cartoons. It was against General Blight and that sort of thing. Mm. In this week's Dandy, he was a paperboy. What?
Yeah.
The hell?
What the...
So the one where it was General Blight, that was... The Beano had that one.
Yes, the Beano had that in there, because I've got a copy of the Beano as well.
Yeah.
Which I actually quite enjoyed. I might have to get that again next week. but Banana Man was in the Beano, and I'd had this horrible scare of the dandy, and then I saw it in the Beano, and I was just sat there going, hang on, what's going on here? Why is he suddenly in the Beano? And he was actually drawn like he used to be in the cartoon. He was instantly recognisable, and it had General Blight in it. And, you know, it had a better story to it, to be fair.
I think whilst I was reading both, because I wasn't that impressed with the Beano, I used to like one of the animated series they did when I was younger of the Beano, which was on one of the Afternoon Kids sort of segments. But I was constantly comparing in my head because I haven't read any other kids' mags for a while, because obviously I haven't had to and I don't have kids. I was comparing in my head to Shaun the Sheep TV series, Trapdoor, yes. And Tom and Jerry.
Trapdoor, oh. Ace. Don't you open that door.
But I found that at no point really did Dandy surpass the humour of either of those three TV series. And one of those dates is old, well, either as old as the Dandy, if not perhaps older, which is Tom and Jerry. One's from the 80s, which is Trapdoor, and then Shaun the Sheep, which is recent, which, obviously, you know, kids today would kind of get more, and it's an award-winning series, I might add. And nobody speaks in Shaun the Sheep, or Tom and Jerry, really, but they're certainly tons better than anything I was reading of the Dandy from last week, technically, with the one that's published on Wednesday last week.
It just sounds like the Dandy has been run into the ground on zero cash.
It would seem that way, yeah, definitely. I mean, it would look like a lot of the characters that used to be in the Dandy have now jumped ship to the Beano.
The ones that actually work.
Yeah. You know, it's absolutely bizarre. I mean, you didn't even have Corky the Cat in the Dandy this week, which I was gobsmacked at. I used to love Corky the Cat, and he's gone.
I think it's also somewhat... I mean, was Desperate Dan always on the back page of the Dandy?
No, he was always on the first page.
Yeah.
He's been relegated to the back, and I think you had a comic strip called... Was it Megalomaniac or something?
I've got it open in front of me now. It's Megalomaniacs, yeah. And subtitled Bullhorn, which was about a little school kid who's a bit of a nerd, having to tidy up the gym. And then this weirdo bad guy called Bullhorn turning up, going, I can beat you at any sport, blah, blah, and take over the planet if I can beat you at any sport. And they just start the sport competition where it all goes to heck and high water. And it's just like, well, really? I don't really want to subject people to the dialogue because...
No. There was another one.
Things happen.
Yeah, but there was another one in there that I thought, oh my God, this is just... Somebody's thought, oh, let's rip off the Powerpuff Girls, and just gone absolutely in the opposite direction, ran around and just screwed it into the ground. Three characters in there, three girl heroes. Oh. One's a devil, yeah. One's a witch, and the other one was a goblin or something.
Some of that is called Girls.
Yeah, that's the one. Girls.
Yeah. Girls. They had to deal with something that looks like it's a long-lost cousin of Cthulhu, but was nowhere near as impressive as Cthulhu. Yeah.
And then further on, they have to deal with a kraken in their boss's toilet that is actually just across the road from their secret headquarters.
I mean, is it me or was there actually a lot of references within the Dandy that basically younger kids, probably their target audience, probably wouldn't have got anyway?
Yeah, probably, to be fair.
It's the people with a disposable income, i.e. the adults, who maybe they're trying to get on a nostalgia trip, wouldn't be buying this anyway. Or if they did try and pick up last week's issue, they'd kind of go, why did I do this to myself?
Yeah, so, I'm glad you're dying now.
Yeah, £2 for 36 pages of rubbish. Not good.
Is it £2? I'm just looking at the front cover there. Oh, yeah, it's £1.99.
£1.99, sorry.
You know, yeah, it's £1.99, but then the Beano, which actually is £1.50, yeah.
Which is just bizarre because I think there was exactly the same amount of pages, but the stories were a lot more cohesive and they made a lot more sense. And the characters were instantly recognisable as well.
Also, so the art style was
better. The art style was fair, yeah. They had the Bass Street Kids in as well, which I used to love. So, you know.
The thing is, kids are not stupid.
No.
They know if something isn't well, you know, well done. Whether it's, you know, the artwork or the story, they, you know, they can tell. It just doesn't, you know, appeal as much. So the fact that it's...
Sorry, the palettes are more sophisticated than we actually give them credit for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, with the aforementioned, you know, Shaun the Sheep, things like that, there's a reason those are successful.
Yeah.
And it's not because it's got some flash games being made by Aardman Digital every couple of weeks or whatever, because they do that, or the fact that there's lots of advertising and stuff to do with it. Because actually, in a way, there's not a lot of advertising, because it's a BBC show. It's on BBC. Yeah. So there's no ads to go with it to kind of indoctrinate the kids at the same time.
Yeah.
The main exposure is the TV series. You know, and that was one thing that was annoying me, people kind of who were sort of bemoaning the demise of the Dandy. It was like, oh, it's TV and video games and the internet, oh, and it's like, really? Really?
That's just the lazy go-to. Kids aren't interested in that kind of thing nowadays. It's like, it's funny, but you walk into any big supermarket and they are going to have kids comics there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just not the ones we remember from when we were little.
I'll admit that most of them were sort of stuff to do sort of tie-ins with various TV series, and some I wouldn't say the TV series now are as perhaps a good quality as they used to be, like, because since Thomas the Tank Engine went over to the States or Mexico, wherever it's been animated now, it's completely CG and has talking engines. I'd say the quality of that's kind of gone down a hill a bit, and same similar sort of situation with Bob the Builder. But
I'm all for, you know, everything's going to change, I'm going to see things in a different view, but I think the Dandy should have been treated with a little bit more respect than it obviously has done, because there was potential for it if they moved with the times, and I don't think they've moved with the times. If anything, it's just, I don't know, it's
stagnated.
Yeah,
it's
probably stagnated, and it's gone through a lot of changes, and they just haven't kept up with the times.
I'll say this. I mean, and I was born in 75. I'm an old git. Now, I didn't really read the Dandy and the Beano and all of those when I was growing up. I'd occasionally get them bought by, you know, my gran or aunties or, you know, things like that. And I'd read them. But I was reading comics like an old favourite of mine, which was Spider-Man and Zoids.
Yes, no, I remember that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, those two, they just go so naturally together, Spider-Man and Zoids.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's obvious. So I was reading things like that where you were getting a mixture. And then I went on and read 2000 AD and, you know, comics like that. And those were the kinds of things that they'd have... They'd be multi-layered.
Yeah.
If you just wanted people being shot, or, you know, with some of the other strips, you know, a bit of humour or things like that. Yeah, they were there, but they also had layers built on them. So as you got older, you could still continue reading them.
You could grow up with them.
Mm. Exactly. But things like the Dandy and the Beano, to me, they're always the kinds of things that they're bought by relatives. They're not necessarily what the kids would go for themselves.
They're an old favourite, aren't they? They're like a traditional dessert, like apple pie with custard.
They are the go-to comics.
They are the traditional expected comics, yeah.
I'm going to see my nephew. I'll get him a packet of sweets and a copy of the Dandy or the Beano, because that's what you do.
You see...
Go ahead.
Apart from that, they've never been girl-friendly. And apparently, I mean, I was reading a Guardian article about the old girls' comics like Ginty and Misty and stuff. They talk about, like, one of them was still printing into 2001 or something. And I was like, racking my brains, did I ever see that one? Like, in news agents or whatnot, and I couldn't remember ever seeing anything like it. I could only ever remember seeing annoying teeny bopper magazines as a kid, which I occasionally bought, but usually when only the freebies were good. So I never really grew up with comics. It's only been kind of like the last 10 years that I've really gone into them. For me, reading the Beano and the Dandy this week was just kind of like, what? This is comics for young kids over here? Because obviously, as you said, what was it like? Trying to get hold of DC and Marvel over here, so if you haven't got a comic book shop, it's like collections. Sold in Smiths or something that aren't even the like regular issues.
Well, when I was little, we actually had a newsagent up the road. Bearing in mind, my mum and dad actually owned a newsagent as well, hence why I used to read the Beano Dandy, Wizard Chips, and everything else.
Because you could, they were there.
Exactly. They used to sell sort of imported Marvel comics in 5 volumes for like £1, but they were really old ones, and you'd never get them in the sequential order. But that's what I ended up going to, because that's the sort of thing I actually enjoyed more than the Beano and Dandy, to be totally honest with you. And I just grew out of them. So
I think we've certainly established that even though obviously they're both humour based, even humour has got a story behind it, and the story isn't there to support the humour at all. Whether it's slapstick or a bit kind of what's the term I'm looking for, just kind of the sort of gross humour, whatever. It's not, the story's not there to back it up. Once they come to the conclusion of like where the punchline is, it's like, well, actually, there isn't really a punchline. It's just kind of something
stuff
that happens.
It's bizarre, but it has, by what I've read, it has definitely gone downhill. I will say that. I will go on record saying that, because I do not, and maybe it is just me and my memories, but I do not remember it as being as dire as that when I was younger, especially not for the Dandy. That was just awful.
Insulting.
Yeah, it was. It was totally insane. And I'm sure I'll probably have loads of people having a go at me now going, you can't say that, but I can. It's obviously outdated. It's ran its time, and we'll just have to see what happens next.
Well, I mean, they're meant to be making an online service of it. If you go to, was it the Dandy, Dandy.com?
It's Dandy.com, where there's a massive timer on it, counting down for 105 days. Whether that's to doomsday, I don't know.
Oh, well, they're meant to be relaunched. They're meant to be, it the last printed issue, something like coming out like the December 4th this year, and then they're launching a web version. And it's like, well, unless they improve the writing, I can't see how a web version's going to do any better.
Well, it's not just that, but, I mean, obviously there's web comics that are free.
Yes.
So it's, they're gonna, what are they still gonna be asking people to pay for their content,
or they how are they gonna persuade advertisers to come on board after what's happened with the printed one, if they're gonna use advertising, and then they'll be restricted on the advertising, because if you've got stuff that's like products for kids, well, I'm not sure, they're trying to bring in more laws for at least online, but you have to be careful in case you get the sort of ASA.
Yeah, of course. I mean, what is interesting about that website though is the actual Dandy logo, and Desperate Dan is the original concept of Desperate Dan.
Ooh.
With his normal big cow pie. That is the the original version of Desperate Dan that I remember as a kid.
Now, you see, if I was feeling cynical, if I was awake, in other words, I'd say this whole thing where they've said, oh, we may have to close it down. Mm. Oh, we're closing it down, but only in December.
Christmas.
Yeah, to me, it seems it's a publicity drive. They're going to try and relaunch.
I would imagine the sensible thing would be...
The sensible thing and what will happen is...
It would be to actually merge the Beano with the Dandy characters. And have like the Beano and Dandy in one, in a bumper edition.
Yeah, maybe unite them under one name or something like that. But
yeah, exactly. That would, but obviously, that might be illogical to people. I don't know. It just just might not work.
So. Yeah, it's like the, you know, the relaunches we were talking about last week with, you know, Marvel and DC. And it just, to me, the website with the timer and the, oh, you know, we've got headlines. People have been talking about the Dandy for the first time in probably years.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a spike in sales, I would presume, because lots of people will be rushing out and buying it and thinking, is this the last issue now? Is it, oh no, not yet.
Well, the thing is as well with the Dandy, a lot of collectors do collect the Dandies. So a lot of people are probably going to rush out and buy the last issue to try and hold on to it for prosperity for selling on eBay in, say, 10, 15 years' time, thinking it might be worth a bit.
I said, no, well, good luck with that, because everyone will have thought, I'll buy the last issue.
Oh, yes, exactly. However, bringing up Marvel and the new 52 from DC and that,
yeah,
I'm just thinking the Dandy 52 wouldn't work, but the 52 Dandies probably would.
That to me just sounds like the Conservative Party conference, but I'll agree.
I have to admit, the name of the Dandy has always confused me, it being called the Dandy, because me with my literature background, what I got taught in my degree and stuff, it's like a dandy, somebody like Oscar Wilde. Yeah. So I've never understood why it's called the Dandy.
So I think you'll find I read the more upper class version, which is called the FOP.
Okay.
It is when, you know, with you saying that, it is, even the name of it is hugely out of date.
Yes.
It's become itself now. It has no other meaning to, you know, most of the people who will read it. Yeah, it's just, I was thinking about that myself. It's just, you know, the Dandy. Who would name, if you were going to do a comic for kids now, why would you call it something like the Dandy? Who's going to know what that means apart from, you know, people who probably wouldn't be buying it in the first place because they know what Dandy means?
I think we've reached the natural conclusion of this conversation.
I believe we've wrung the last bit of life out of the Dandy.
Just like its publishers.
Left them.
Yes.
Okay. Well, ladies, gentlemen, this has been the Nerds Assemble podcast. Just so that you know, you can find us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. You can also find our website, which is www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also on Facebook as Nerds Assemble Podcast, all one word, all lowercase. So, it's bye from. Please, somebody speak.
I'll go first. Yeah, bye from me. My Twitter's Paul Blewett, and I have a website, paul-blewett.com.
And I am Paul, aka onearmed_cookie on Twitter. You can normally find me lurking and grumbling around thegamejar.com.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid, Super Retroid, on Twitter, and Retroid on Eurogamer.net.
And I'm Emily, and I'm usually found stalking Twitter at EK6891. Thank you for listening, and bye.
Thank you all.
Bye.
See you next time.